and welcome to the March 2nd meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Here.
Here.
Osman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. We will take council communications first and then our consent calendar and regular agenda. If you're here to speak on a regular agenda item, just let our council clerk know and she will make sure you get a chance to speak. Doesn't look like we'll have any trouble accommodating people. We typically allow 3 minutes for testimony, and that shouldn't be a problem today. If you're here to give council testimony, you need to give us only your name, no need for address and such. And we always maintain the rules of decorum in this chamber, which is if you agree with someone and feel like you need to show support, give them a thumbs up or a wave of the hand. And if you disagree and still feel like you need to show that, a negative hand gesture that's polite, but negative is fine. But we don't make demonstrations or rounds of applause in this chamber unless it's for school children or dignitaries. And so if you're one of those, you might get special treatment. With that, there is a consent calendar, and we've had three requests to pull things to the regular agenda. One of them is 197, one of them is 201, and the third is 202. Any other requests to pull items to the regular calendar? Okay. Then let's take item 189, please.
Item 189, request of Crystal Olinsky to address council regarding political favors and incumbency.
Ms. Olinsky, are you here? Okay, then let's move on to 190, please.
Request of Jonah Collin to address council regarding city general funds to support Portland Development Commission's economic development work.
Good morning. Come on up.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Jonathan Colom. I'm the Senior Business Development Coordinator for the Hispanic Chamber. And I haven't been here in a while, so I actually feel nervous amongst friends.
Don't be nervous. You are among friends.
I wanted to take this moment because I actually, as you all know, my boss, the Hispanic Chamber President, retired, and we just have our new president, and gave me a chance to reflect on the work that we've been doing. And as I looked up for a moment from being on the ground, I realized that Oregon has been changing, Portland has significantly, the landscape has been changing. And as we looked at the work, I've been there 13 years, a little bit over decade and a half. And as I looked up for a moment, I realized how much of the work that has been led by this leadership has impacted our community. As our faces of our buildings and our streets change, it's so odd for me to drive on Division and see members of communities of color, small business, on those streets. And that's taking a lot of time and foresight. The NED strategy that was directed, the PDC work that's done with the small technical assistance work that's done by the 7 nonprofits that support PDC in doing that work, who are on the ground working with these communities. It's amazing to me to be on 122nd and see a client in the front on an anchoring a building or a shopping mall that came out of an office in downtown Portland or came out of an office, a provider like NAIL, MISO, or ERCO. The work that's being done under the Small Business Technical Assistance Program, it's very significant to our city, and it's changing the landscape. When we see gentrification come, when we see new buildings go up, preparing these small businesses to be in and to stay in that game is very, very significant. You have an ask from the agency. You have a decision package that you will be voting on, and we support that. I've actually sat on the committee and looked at it from on the ground mindset of what can be done, what are we doing, and are we actually getting results. Just came back from the Central East Side. Beeline was here a few years ago as a success story out of one of these programs, and I just walked into their new 15,000 square feet. Not a current client. Well, they're friends now, right? So not a current client, but it's something that you seeded, and you've seen that grow over time. We have businesses on 122nd. We have businesses on Powell. We have businesses on Division. We have businesses on Williams, areas that have had a significant change, but these technical assistants are not only providing the technical assistance for the small business in all aspects, but it's also doing the management and the relationship building with landlords to take a chance with some of these businesses. It's not just getting the businesses ready. It's also convincing those landlords, those investors, those bankers, that these businesses will generate the return on investment. Return on investment is another significant one for us.
Finish up. I know you're on a roll, but finish up. Yep.
Thanks. I just wanted to say that your contribution and your support also leverages these nonprofits, so we come to the table with also some resources to support that budget.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate your partnership. Thanks.
Thanks.
Okay. 191, please.
191, request of Krista Stovall to address council regarding city general funds to support Portland Development Commission's traded sector economic development work.
Stovall, are you here? Okay, let's move on then to 192 then, please.
192, request of Sakita Ray Krimmel to address council regarding city general funds to support Portland Development Commission's traded sector economic development work. Go ahead.
Good morning. Welcome. Come on up.
Good morning, commissioners and mayor. I've never done this, so I'm a little nervous as well.
Ah, don't be.
So my name is Sukita Ray Krimmel. I am the owner and developer of Claylin LLC, which is a Portland Development Commission's, it's a green traded product, and we're in the southeast Powell Foster area and actually looking to find some more location for our warehouse in the Lentz District and currently working with PDC on helping find that. I'm here to express my support of the Portland Development Commission's continued economic development programs. I met them in 2013 as a part of the Clean Tech Open, which is a program they sponsored, and I was able to receive a lot of support on business development and investment pitch practice and support. I continue to receive awards in that program and have continued to work with them on more introductions to more investors and even more training on how to speak with investors. So I enjoy their support, and that's about all. If you're interested in earthen floors, this is a mini version. It's a clay-based.
Yeah,
it's a no cement, non-toxic. It's made of local clay soils, local sands, and local straw, mixed wet, troweled out, and then after it's dry, it's sealed with drying oils, linseed oil, tung oil, pine rosin. So it's the greenest brown floor on the market, and they're very supportive of me bringing it to this city. It's the only one on the market in the States at all, and we're working here and going to grow from Portland.
So. That's great. Is it laid as tiles, or is it a continuous surface?
No, it's continuous slab, so it's similar to a cement floor in that way.
Yeah.
It's just easier to bring a small slab.
Yeah, no, that's great.
You know, thank you for coming today. We're going to be taking up the general fund portion of the PDC budget in April, and I got a preview yesterday, and the mayor and the council have asked PDC to show a 5% cut, and there's also some ad packages, and we're gonna have to really roll up our sleeves to get it right. So if you have further thoughts about the cut packages or the ad packages, we hope you'll weigh in as well, either by email or by coming to that hearing.
Okay, thank you for that. Yeah.
Thanks. Thank you so much.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck. Thank you. Okay, let's take the consent calendar, please. Unless there are any other requests, we'll take the consent calendar minus those three items that I mentioned earlier.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Dolphman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, let's move to the bypassed consent items. If we have staff here in some cases to discuss them. Commissioner Fish, are you ready on 197 now, or do you want to wait?
I think they were
planning to come a little later.
I think we may. I'll check with my office, Mayor.
All right. We may not have people here to discuss those. We could take 201 and 202, I think, because we just have someone that wants to testify on those. So why don't we take 201, please?
We can do the consent now if he's around.
Item 201. Authorize Amendment 16 to intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County to provide maintenance services west of the Willamette River for fiscal year 14-15.
So you wanted to testify on this? Lightning, come on up, please.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. One of the reasons why I pulled this item is basically I wanted to have a more clear understanding from Multnomah County on certain areas that haven't been annexed to the city, and also having an understanding on that, I guess from my position, I think that we have a problem on maintaining a lot of the streets already from the city of Portland's position. And what I'd like to see happen is that maybe Multnomah County begins to pick up a little more from their side on this issue. And when we're discussing on paying them back on certain areas that haven't been annexed to the city as of this time, from agreements that were put together many years ago, I think there's maybe a time to look at this and say, you're showing a surplus budget, you have additional funds, you've brought in money from other areas. They had a lawsuit, they brought in $10 million, they just sold another property, brought in another $10 million. Why don't we make a proposal to Multnomah County to start picking up these costs and not ask us to reimburse them?
Actually, Lightning, that's what this does. It provides that the city gets compensated by Multnomah County for work that we do in these areas that we'd expected to annex and haven't yet.
But my question is, we've been doing that up to this point. This is just an extension of the original agreement.
This allows us to bill Multnomah County for the services that we provide in those unincorporated areas.
Okay.
Yeah, I think this is going in the direction that you want.
I think this is, and that's why I wanted this to be explained a little bit more, because I do agree with this ordinance and the direction it's going, and I'm surprised this hasn't been put forward many years ago, because I think these properties haven't been annexed into the city, and Multnomah County should pay their share on this. So I do agree with this ordinance, and that's why I wanted to have it explained. Thank you.
Thank you. Why don't you stay? I think you wanted to speak on the next item. But anyone else want to speak on this?
I just also had a comment that when anybody has questions about any item on the city's agenda, if you want to call the office of the commissioner who's sponsoring it the day before, you can talk to the staff person who's looked into it and maybe get some more questions answered. All of our offices have staff who are more than glad to talk through ordinances that are on the agenda to clarify any misunderstandings that may be.
If I could respond to that real fast,
sure,
since
quickly.
That's directed toward me. I prefer to conduct my business in the council chambers where minutes are taken and videos are taken and the public has access. So when I come in here and ask these type of questions, and I have pulled that from the consent agenda to the regular agenda, and if there's nobody to speak on it on behalf of the city, then that's okay, because you can take that position and not have somebody here. But I still want to put it on record and to conduct my business in the council chambers to where the public can hear what I'm saying, and if they want to send emails to add to that, they have a right to do that also. But if I do that behind closed doors and they have no access, then I'm really defeating the whole purpose of what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, you certainly have the right to do that. I'm just saying for those watching at home, if they too have questions and they can't come to City Council at 9:30 on a Wednesday morning, they're welcome to call the offices or send an email, which also goes on the public record.
Okay, that's more than fair. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's take a vote on that, please.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hale.
Aye. It's good to get paid. Okay, let's take 202, please.
Authorizing an intergovernmental agreement with the U.S. Department of Agriculture for wildlife damage and conflict management from January 1, 2016 to December 31, 2017.
And I failed to ask Commissioner Novick if you needed to have anybody here on this one. I know Lightning wanted to testify.
No, we didn't.
Please go ahead.
Yes, again, I pulled this item to have a clear understanding that when we're dealing on these type of projects for transportation and we're concerned about the wildlife, I was hoping the Audubon Society would have been here and taken a closer look at this, because One of the concerns I have is that on these type of projects, obviously on all the wildlife, from the birds to the beavers to the ducks and everything else, I want to make sure that when they're talking about removing them from certain locations in certain ways, I want to make sure that in these agreements that the Audubon Society or one of their representatives will be reviewing everything that they're proposing, because I have a concern on some of the methods on removing, let's say, a beaver in a certain location, or birds, or raccoons, and I have a concern on how they're proposing to do that, and I want to make it very clear up front. I want to see their plans on how they're going to do that. I want to see their plans on where they plan on moving them. I want to see their plans on making sure that the safety of the wildlife is the number one priority here when you're trying to do a certain project here. And that's my biggest concern, is the safety of the wildlife, and to make sure there's a good plan in place that focuses on that and on the nests they might want to remove and various things like that, and the smaller raccoons. What are they going to do? How are they going to move them? And where are they going to take them to? And that's my biggest concern. I want to make sure there's some input from some other representatives, such as maybe the Audubon Society, on this issue, and make sure that the wildlife is being protected at any and all costs. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Anyone else want to speak on this item? If not, then let's take a vote, please.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ish.
Aye.
Hausman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hale.
Aye. Thank you. Okay, then Commissioner Fish, you have staff here now, I believe, for 197?
Yes, Mayor.
Okay, let's take 197 then.
Mike, can you come up?
197, amend the regional water sales agreements with Tualatin Valley Water District and the City of Tualatin.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. First of all, we received some questions about this item. I moved it to the regular agenda, and I was particularly pleased that Commissioner Fritz asked for a red line version of the agreement, which is something that came up in another item we had before council recently. I think it was a transportation item. And I appreciate, Commissioner Fritz, you making that request, because it is indeed much easier to show you what we've done or haven't done off a red line. And I hope that becomes the norm. I'll give you just a little bit of background. As my colleagues know, the Water Bureau serves about 1 million customers in the region. Of that 1 million, about a little less than 600,000 customers are in the city of Portland. And the rest of the customers we serve through what's called wholesale agreements with other water providers. Currently, the revenue generated from our wholesale agreements is just under $20 million this fiscal year. Now, this is a complicated area, but I'll just highlight the most important detail for purposes of Mike Sturr's presentation. We sell two kinds of water to our wholesale customers. One is called guaranteed water, and that's where we have a guaranteed amount of water. We agree on the price, and that's about 97-98% of the water that we sell. Then we have something called interruptible water, which is basically water above and beyond the guaranteed amount that has a more complicated formula that we use to determine price. Tualatin Valley Water District is one of our most important wholesale customers. Since 2013, we've had a dispute about how to calculate interruptible water. Thanks to mediation and negotiation, we reached an agreement. The net effect of the agreement is the matter before us actually has a nominal value. But the upside to the city and to our customers is that it opens the door for us to sell more water to TVWD. And if we sell more water, we generate more revenue. And without this settlement, they were not taking as much water as we had to offer because of the disagreement about how interruptible water should be calculated. So I hope I haven't done too much violence to this, but I want to introduce Mike Sturr, who will give you a very brief presentation.
I, of course, agree with what the commissioner said. Good morning, Mr. Mayor, commissioners. We're pleased to be talking to you about an agreement that's 2 years in the making. I think it's important to note that, yes, it took us 2 years to get to this point. But the reason it took 2 years is you have essentially three utilities who all care very much about their ratepayers. And so we each, in our own way, tried to do the best we could for the ratepayers. Built into our contract are standard mediation arbitration provisions, and we chose to use a mediator when we arrived at an impasse, and we came to an acceptable agreement, which might be a model for happenings on the East Coast sometimes, maybe. The amendment before council today has to do with the methodology and formulas of calculating rates for our wholesale customers. I'd thought about bringing algebra in here and putting the formulas up, but
please don't.
They actually make my eyes glaze over, too. To give you some background, wholesale customers, as the commissioner said, purchase two types of water. Guaranteed water, for which we charge more because we have to provide, so it costs them a little bit more. And interruptible water, which is just what it sounds like. They don't have to purchase it, and we don't have to sell it. Interruptible water is over and above the guaranteed maximum. We have the guaranteed max or the guaranteed purchase because that's what we use to make our capital investments on upstream of wherever the wholesaler takes off. So the guaranteed part is very important. But up there in the Bull Run, we have this warehouse full of water. And so selling more water is an extremely good thing. And that's the purpose of interruptible water. We wanted to make it possible to sell interruptible water when it worked for us and it worked for them. On average, for these two wholesale customers, interruptible water is made up about 2%, 2.5% of the water that we provide them, and 97% of the water that we provide them is guaranteed maximum. Even though that's a small amount of total water sales, we had a disagreement about calculating something called peaking factors, and you have to do the algebra to figure out what that means. But it was a legitimate disagreement, and we came to terms about that. We offered an initial shot, and they didn't care for that shot, and in the end, we came to an agreement. We used our contract provisions. These folks are more than customers. They're really our partners. Our relationship is decades long, and we hope extends decades in the future. If you want to know a little bit about the numbers, the differences in the city's initial position and the final compromise before you today is approximately $33,000 over 3 years on $50 million worth of sales. That's point, I had a calculator to do this, it's 0.007%. It's a very, very small disagreement, and I think very worth it for our relationship with our customers. So now that we have reached an agreement, which both their regulating bodies have approved, I think this solves our dispute, and it will allow us in the end to sell more water, which is good for our ratepayers. I'm ready for any questions you might have.
Questions? Okay, thank you very much. Anyone want to speak on this item? It is not an emergency ordinance. It will go to second reading. So thank you, Commissioner Fitch, for bringing peace to the valley. It passes
thank you very much.
Reading next week.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Let's move on to time certain then, please, which is item number, 193,
declare intent to initiate local improvement district formation proceedings to construct street, sidewalk, and stormwater improvements from the north of Northeast Columbia Boulevard to the south of Northeast Cornfoot Road in the Northeast 47th Avenue Phase 1 Local Improvement District.
Thank you. Commissioner Novick.
Before Andrew and Allison proceed, I'd like to commend the interbureau partnership between PBOT Parks and DES relevant to this item. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz and Commissioner Fish, for collaborating with us in this potential improvement district. I look forward to continuing to partner with your offices in the future on collaborative improvement projects like this one. We're proposing to add new sidewalks and bike lanes while reconstructing the street. Should council move forward with this LID, Northeast 47th Avenue will become an attractive multimodal corridor, improving park access and ensuring families in the area have a safer path to walk on. The project will also connect Cully residents to new job growth in Columbia Corridor, Cascade Station, and the PDX Airport. And I'll turn it over to Andrew and Allison.
Thank you, Commissioner Novick. Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator and Project Manager. Sue, if we can switch to the presentation. So this is the Northeast 47th Avenue Phase 1 LID. The reason it has Phase 1 in the title is because we have another stretch of 47 to the south that is unpaved, which at some point in the future may be a Phase 2 LID, but that's not before the council today. So this is a project map of Northeast 47th Avenue. On the left, you can see the detail of the properties that will benefit from the improvements. And on the right is sort of a spiderweb map of the LID boundary. This is an unusual LID boundary in that it has tentacles reaching pretty far away from Northeast 47th Avenue. The reason for that being is we know that we'll have some construction detours, and we needed to draw the boundary per IRS rules to allow for the expenditure of funds on traffic detours. But none of the properties to the east or west or south of Northeast 47th Avenue or along Cornfoot Road will be part of this LID. It's just strictly for traffic detours. With that, before I get too deep into the weeds of the planned infrastructure improvements in the right-of-way, I wanted to give my colleague Allison Rouse from Parks a moment to share some perspectives on the planned park capital project.
Thank you, Andrew. My name is Allison Rouse. I'm a capital project manager with the Parks Bureau. The Whitaker Ponds Nature Park contains ponds, sloughs, and natural areas that are ideal for education, bird watching, and other nature-based recreation. Portland Parks and Recreation and its partners actively invite school groups and volunteers to the site, but access along Northeast 47th is very difficult. For vehicles, there is a muddy gravel pullout, and school buses have to execute a dangerous backing maneuver in order to turn around. Meanwhile, many visitors arrive on foot, walking along the undeveloped shoulder of this busy truck route. Parks' entry improvements project, which you see on your screen, will provide off-street parking and sidewalks along our frontage. But we also sought a way to close the sidewalk gap between our frontage and Northeast Columbia, which would create safer connections from the adjacent neighborhoods and from the TriMet bus stop on Columbia. Last year, we called Andrew for help, and since then, PBOT, Parks, and BES have developed a solution to this infrastructure gap that prevents Parks from building a section of half-street improvements as a part of our project that would likely have had to come out when the entire street was reconstructed. It will be well coordinated with our planned entry improvements project and will allow both projects to be built concurrently in 2017, which will minimize the disruption for the neighbors and to the freight community. Andrew?
Thank you, Allison. So there's quite a bit of infrastructure that we're looking to rebuild here. So we're going to fully reconstruct a priority truck street, which is on the national highway system. In response to property owner concerns about access during construction, we have budgeted for a temporary signal at Alderwood and Columbia, which is within the LID boundary. And in the process of reconstructing the street, that affords the opportunity to add sidewalks on both sides of the street and bike lanes on both sides of the street, not only down to Columbia to the south, but also north to Cornfoot Road. PBOT staff have been working very hard to incorporate physically separated bike facilities into the design, so we expect that to be part of the final design. We're going to also be extending stormwater sewer and adding surface water management facilities. Just as an example of how citizens can make a real difference, I got a call from a property owner about 3 weeks ago saying that he didn't have sanitary sewer service, and gee, it really wouldn't make sense to build this new project and not incorporate the sanitary sewer. So I talked to BES, and we are going to add a dry line sanitary sewer into the scope of the street so that we don't have to jackhammer out the concrete a couple years after we construct it. So that'll be really good utility coordination between BES and PBOT. We're going to add bird-friendly street lighting, and as Allison mentioned, this will all be fully integrated with Whitaker Ponds.
What's a dry line sewer?
It's where you put the pipe in, but you don't necessarily have all of the laterals in place or pump stations and other, I always have to practice saying this word, appurtenances in place to actually convey all the sanitary sewage. So thank you, Commissioner. So this is a financial snapshot of the LID. Keep in mind that this is not including the cost of the dry line sewer. You can see that a little over two-thirds of the funding is from PBOT system development charge revenue. This is pretty rare to be able to devote this many resources into an underserved neighborhood like Cully. And it's made possible due to the partnership with BES and Parks, which are providing the local match that state law requires us to have for FCC-funded projects. And what's very unusual about this LID is that most of the time when I bring LIDs to council, it's usually on the order of 95-97% financed by the property owners, about 3-5% financed by the city. All of these FCC resources from PBOT and the Parks and the BES contribution flips that ratio around where it's going to be about 97% funded by the city and about 3% by the property owners. Part of the reason that we did that is for several reasons. One is this is an underserved neighborhood, so we're trying to redress some of the infrastructure deficiencies of the past. But also, the properties in common ownership, almost all of them will have a future financial liability to improve Northeast 46th Avenue, Northeast Buffalo Street, and Northeast Crystal Lane. And so what we wanted to do is to defer that, the bulk of the LID financial obligation, until some point in the future when those other streets are improved. And BES and Parks will not be financially contributing to those streets improvements in the future. So we felt that this was a balanced way to fund the infrastructure over the long term. This is a section view that we came up with. It shows the travel lanes, northbound and southbound, one traveling each direction, no center turn lane. You can also see that we have physical separation there to the extent possible between the travel lanes and then the bikes and the sidewalks. So we're very excited to be able to rebuild 1,900 feet of street and offer that degree of physical separation. So this is a plan view. You can kind of see the bird's eye view of what this will all look like when we build it. I do want to, in the interest of transparency, say that there is a trade-off with this, and the trade-off is by putting in the bike facilities and the sidewalks, there will be no on-street parking on the street. But what we're trying to do is to make the best use of the public right-of-way to serve the most number of people, and we believe that we can do that by adding multimodal option. So these are a couple of pictures I took of the pavement condition at the end of last November. You can see the pretty badly alligatored concrete, and if you stand out there, you'll see a truck rumbling down the street about every 45 seconds. So, you know, at some point, we knew that we'd have to rebuild the street. So just to expand on that a little bit, we actually have the three segments of 47th mapped, and they're in different levels of pavement condition. The worst segment is along the north end, and that is in the worst 0.9% pavement condition in the city. So what that means is by rebuilding this street, if we get additional resources from the voters in May to maintain our streets, instead of those dollars being used to Northeast 47th Avenue, they can be redirected to other streets in the city. I wanted to show you that picture there on the bottom. That's North Marine Drive. That was built in early 1992. As part of a periodic rating cycle, our maintenance bureau went out in 2014, 22 years later, and they took a picture, they did the inspection, and they gave that pavement a perfect rating. So it needed no maintenance whatsoever after 22 years of trucks going up and down the street. So what we've done here is that we've budgeted 11.1% more money for the pavement section as opposed to a cheaper alternative, but our goal is 22 years after we construct Northeast 47th, that it'll look just as good as North Marine Drive. So talking a little bit about the neighborhood in which this project is located, Cully, they have less street and stormwater and sidewalk infrastructure as opposed to the city as a whole. I've kind of recapped those statistics there for your review. And really where that burden falls is on a really diverse segment of the population, in some cases lower income. You can, you know, look at all those that really, those who are most burdened by the lack of infrastructure or are our more diverse elements of the city population. So one of the things PBOT trying to do as part of its equity initiative is really to target investments where possible to serve underserved neighborhoods. And here's a real-life example of what we're trying to do. So on the left is a picture that was taken in 2010 of school children on a field trip trying to walk to Whitaker Ponds along the fog line. And then the middle picture shows Northeast Cully Boulevard prior to us building sidewalks and a cycle track where a mom pushing her stroller, you know, to the right of the fog line. The picture on the right is a sidewalk project that we did a couple years ago in the 11,000 block of Northeast Prescott Street. It was a sidewalk infill project. And that's really our objective with this project, is to make the environment so comfortable for bikes and pedestrians that even a baby would feel safe being out there in the public right-of-way. And just to wrap up, here is the list of stakeholders who've sent in letters of support. I do just want to clarify for the record, I passed out a memo dated March 1st with the referent 10 letters of support. I'm going to send an updated memo to Sue after the close of the hearing. We received an 11th letter of support, and I will be sending you an updated memo dated March 2nd reflecting that 11th letter. However, the 11th letter of support is attached to the memo. So I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions?
A question for Allison.
Yes.
I tend to lose track of all the good work that happens in parks. Did parks get other grants or money from Metro or elsewhere for the other parts of this project?
The Whitaker Ponds Entry Improvements Project received a grant from Metro for $420,000 to help plan the improvements just on those frontages on that site. So we're very pleased that Metro's initiative in giving us that grant and suggesting that we seek ways to close the sidewalk gap has resulted in this very large investment in this underserved neighborhood.
Thanks very much. Anyone else want to speak on this item? I think we have some people signed up to speak. Is that right?
We have 10 people signed up to testify. Will the first three come up, please? Corinna Chase, Mark Hatton, Larry Jones. They will be followed by Bob Dolphin, Corky Collier, and Alondo Simpson.
Morning.
Good morning. I'm Corinna Chase. I'm the new executive director for Columbia SLU Watershed Council, and our office is located right next to Whitaker Ponds, and you saw the photograph of what it looks like. I think it's actually a little bit worse than that even shows. There's so much truck traffic. There's pallets piled. There's huge trucks parked there, and I can't even imagine having kids walking down that street. It's pretty awful. So as you might know, our mission is to enhance, restore, and protect the Columbia SLU Watershed Council, or the watershed. We have around 6,000 students that we work with each year, around 2,300 citizens. We bring them to Whitaker Ponds for cycling and for paddling and for outdoor education work. And we have around 200 restoration volunteers. Sorry, I have a head cold. I'm kind of... so our office, it's a great place to bring students, but when they come to the office, often they're coming from the bus stop that's on Columbia. And we really need the separation from the road, and having a sidewalk and a bike lane there will be a really significant improvement. I really support the work that the parks have done to incorporate the improvement with the road improvement as well. This was also identified in the council's action plan for one of our top priorities. In addition to serving the people that are coming to the park to work with the council, there are plenty of people that use the route for commuting or for recreational visit to the park. I think that this is a very important project, and I hope that it will receive the support that it needs. If you have any questions from the council, from the Watershed Council.
Just actually a project question I should have asked earlier. I noticed the area of improvement doesn't go all the way up to Columbia Boulevard. Is that we're not going to have a sidewalk gap there when we're done, right? You'll be able to get from the bus stop to your office on pavement the whole way if you're leaving the bus stop?
That's my understanding.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's take the next folks, please. Come on up.
We can do three at a time if we have the next person come up.
Come on up, and you can go ahead and get started.
Okay, great. Good morning. My name is Mark Hatton, and this is my father-in-law, Larry Jones. And we live and work on Northeast Crystal Lane, and I can't tell you how excited I am for this project. I traveled the whole length of basically Northeast 47 from Columbia, north on Columbia, to almost Cornfoot every day, and I've seen the kids get off the bus and almost get hit, and I've almost hit people myself. I'm a runner and a rider. I ride to work, and I've almost been hit. It's pretty scary. But actually, my father-in-law has. We were talking on our way over here tonight or this morning about a close call incident that he had just last night.
I'm Larry Jones, Mr. Hales, Mayor Hales, and commissioners. Thank you for hearing us. I have lived at the corner of Northeast Crystal Lane and 47th for 8 years now. And when I first moved in there, I decided that I would try to live my life without benefit of a car. And so I used my feet, a bicycle, and TriMet, which meant that I had to either on bicycle by feet go to Columbia Boulevard, which is almost precisely a half mile to catch a bus, or get my bike farther. And I can tell you that in the many, many thousands of trips that I took, there was never a time that I wasn't acutely aware of the dangers of traversing that half mile. So I only wish that this project had been accomplished 10 years ago. Only last night, I left after dark in the rain to do an errand up on farther south on 42nd, and there was a large delivery van similar to the one that was in the picture earlier going north as I was going south, so I focused on him because of the narrow street to safely pass him. And right at the narrowest point of the street in terms of pedestrian access, I passed him, and just as I did so, an individual appeared out of the blue, of course wearing all black in the dark, rainy night, which is certainly common in Portland, and it scared the life out of me. I don't think I have anything else to add, Mark.
I also wanted to add that whole area, or I should say from Columbia to Cornfoot, doesn't have any sewers. We're all on leach fields, and I'm the one that actually alerted Andrew about the idea of, instead of putting in all this new beautiful street and then tearing it up 6 months later, it just made total sense to put the sewer in beforehand. That's the dry line.
Yes, that's great.
We've been ridiculous.
Yeah, well, thanks for working with us on this, and I'm glad you've made all those risky trips successfully, and glad that we're not going to be rolling the dice anymore out there. So keep being alert until we get it done, please. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Bob Dolphin, and I'm on the board of the nonprofit Columbia Sioux Watershed Council. And this has been in our radar for about 20 years, this project. I mean, we've seen kids walking down that street, so I don't have a whole lot else to add, but I really want to commend the city for pulling the three bureaus together. Whoever did that and the staff really did a great job, and this project really grew to a great project. You know, the separated bike lane and sidewalk, and I mean, it's really been a great project. The better quality street for the heavy truck traffic goes down there. So really the city staff and whoever pulled all these bureaus together to make this happen really did a great job. So I commend the group who did that. And it'll be great to see, you know, the truck traffic, the business traffic moving at the same time kids and bikes are going down, all down the same street. So it's a great project, and I hope you all push it forward.
Thank you. Thanks for your help. Thank you all.
The next three are Corky Collier, Alondo Simpson, Nilanda Gunasekavan. Please come up. They'll be followed by Rebecca Hamilton, Rich Gunderson, and Lauren Young.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Corky Collier, Executive Director of the Columbia Corridor Association. One of the really great things about the Columbia Corridor is the proximity of middle-wage jobs to neighborhoods. Unfortunately, the connections from those neighborhoods to those middle-wage jobs are a little bit less than what we'd like. 39% of Columbia Corridor employees live within 5 miles where they work. That's biking distance, but those bike connections are inferior, to say the least. The connections to Coley are even more important because Coley is one of the last bastions of middle-wage people living inside of I-205. It's a fantastic neighborhood, but they're on the cusp of being pushed out. More gentrification coming in there. And probably the most effective way to fight that is to make sure that they have good access to those middle wage jobs, which are literally right across the railroad tracks from them. This project helps do that. It gives a good bike connections, good pedestrian connections. It also brings swales. It brings great access to Whitaker Ponds, which is a jewel. If you guys haven't been out there during the summer to go paddling down to the slough, I invite you to come out and join us. But for me, the most important thing is that connection to those jobs. I think that's a good way to keep this city healthy. I do ask that you stress to staff that as we move forward with the final designs, that if we get down to some tough decisions, that there's a little bit of a stress, just a little bit of preference toward freight safety on this street. This isn't a freight district, of course, and the last thing we want is for a truck to get into a swale sprawled across a bike lane. So when it comes down to it, if we have just a slight preference for that, I think that would be great. As Andrew pointed out to you, this is a bit of an odd LID in the sense that most of the money is coming from the city. Normally, it's completely the reverse. I ask that you trust Andrew on this, I think, and I suggest that you really can. If you don't know this fellow, get to know him better. He's fantastic. I mean, the city's got a lot of wonderful employees, but Andrew, in my mind, is in an elite class. And I get excited when I see him walking toward me because I know that he has a good project that he's working on. And I know, most importantly, that he really, really embraces all the problems that he encounters with the people that he's working on. All the problems that are affected by a project, he finds solutions for them. And hats off to that. So I support the project. I hope you will, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Great. Good morning. Mayor Hells and fellow members of the council, my name is Orlando Simpson. For the record, my company is City of Roses Disposal and Recycling, a local small business. And I feel like I would share a little bit of something with you today, aside from my comments that I've already shared with those who are other advocates for this particular project, as well as Mr. Andrew Abbey, who's taken a profound leadership role on this particular infrastructure improvement project. This proposed LID on Northeast 47th is definitely something I believe we should move forward with. Being an owner of industrial properties located in blighted and most importantly underserved areas, I have always been a big pessimist of LIDs. And that's primarily due to the magnitude and the nature of those costs that are essentially inflicted on the private property owner. As a small business owner, we've overseen a lot of these challenges in the past and trying to make improvements to our site in order to build our capacity and scale our growth. However, the concept of entertaining LIDs have always hindered that growth, and we've always had to take a step back and not really focus on that. This past December, I had the opportunity to be introduced to LID Administrator Andrew Abbey and to hear about this proposed LID on Northeast 47th. And from what had started as complete doubt on my end, quickly turned into a significant amount of optimism, appreciation, and support. Mr. Abbey's innovative approach to pulling together public resources from different bureaus in order to assure this historically underserved community of property owners would not have to consume the typical 95% of cost for a project. This was something that was definitely outside the box and shows true leadership on Mr. Abbey's behalf, as well as PBOT. This particular community, Coley in particular, is in dire need of infrastructure investments in order to accommodate an efficient multimodal transportation system. And these routes are going to impact a historically blighted corridor in a way in which we have never seen before. Mr. Abbey's persistent outreach approaches and ability to bring together the community, government, and private sector stakeholders are illustrations of the grassroots approaches to the shared prosperity we all envision as a city. I would like to commend the various bureaus who are all investing financially into this proposed project. I would also like to acknowledge the leadership of PBOT Director Leah Treat, but most importantly, Mr. Andrew Abbey. They are transformational leaders like him who use innovative programs, outside-the-box thinking, and amazing community outreach processes to achieve the outcomes we can all benefit and prosper from. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Honorable City Council members, my name is Nalana Gunasekaran. I'm a family physician for Kaiser Permanente at the Interstate Medical Building in Portland. I'm also a mother of three school-age children and a longtime resident of Northeast Portland. I have a background in community and family medicine. For the past several years, my primary care practice has been with Kaiser Permanente in Portland. I have also previously worked at community health clinics in Washington, D.C., Baltimore, as well as in Gresham through Multnomah County Health Department. I have always enjoyed working with diverse communities. I care for patients and families of all ages, stages, genders, cultures, and socioeconomic backgrounds. My mission has always been to advocate for my patients' health, both in the immediate day-to-day needs as well as for their long-term preventative care that can impact their future lives. I feel passionate about my job because I know the impact that good health has on individuals as well as on families and the community at large. There is an Arabian proverb that says, "He who has health has hope, and he who has hope has everything." As a family physician, as well as a mother who works and lives in this city, I am here to advocate for both the health and the hopes of our patients who will benefit from this proposal put forth by the Portland Bureau of Transportation to reconstruct Northeast 47th Avenue between Columbia and Cornfoot. Kaiser Interstate, where I practice, is the primary care clinic for many residents of the Northeast Portland area. Many of our members come to our clinic due to its central location in the city. Many drive as well as use the MAX train and the bus to get to our interstate campus. We also have members who bike or walk to our clinic from nearby areas. My patients range in age from 2 weeks old to a glorious 101. We have significant patients who have financial resources and long-term economic security, but we also have others who unfortunately do not have financial resources, and they may struggle to make their ends meet day to day. We have patients who have lived in our city for years, but we also have newcomers brought here, as so many do, yearning for the promise they hope to find in Portland. Kaiser Permanente's goal for all of these patients is to bring the promise of good health into their everyday lives. We aim to educate our patients on the small changes in behaviors that are easy but effective to prevent and control chronic conditions like high blood pressure, diabetes, asthma, and depression. We hope to educate and guide healthy habits that affect how one eats breakfast or how one gets to work or exercises or even has fun. When we talk about putting prevention into practice, we are talking about these very basic measures. These health practices and individuals are what define and affect change to bring about healthy and productive communities. This is why Kaiser invests in many different local community organizations, as well as community programs like Sunday Parkways. From experience, we know that the small changes that we promote on an individual level will determine the success of change on a much greater scale. We know that we will all thrive together only when our city and our citizens thrive first. Therefore, I would like to advocate on behalf of myself and Kaiser Permanente for the reconstruction of Northeast 47th Avenue between Columbia and Cornfoot to allow for sidewalks and bike lanes to enable safe and healthy transportation options for adults and children alike. I have personally driven on this road to the airport in the past. This busy street gives access not just to the airport, but also to businesses nearby, including retail locations, as well as recreational and educational locations like Whitaker Ponds. Allowing individuals to have sidewalks and bike lanes allows safe, healthy, and budget-friendly transportation options. First and foremost, when people feel that an activity is safe, they will opt for this in their daily practice. If they recognize the financial savings as well, they will continue this practice. And when they adopt this practice as a routine or scheduled habit, they are directly investing in their own personal health as well as in the long-term health of their environment and their city. From the perspective of preventative medicine, I am confident that this street reconstruction proposal is a hands-down net positive for our community. On a personal note, in closing, I am a working mother. I have three children who walk and ride their bikes in Northeast Portland. Their daily commute includes destinations like schools, local parks, homes of friends, stores, and restaurants. Like most moms, I always worry a little about their safety, especially while I'm away from home working. But I feel comfort in knowing that my neighborhood has clear sidewalks, designated bike lanes, speed bumps, and stop signs. I value my neighborhood and my city because my city values the safety of my children. I know my city is investing in the long-term health and security of my children, and this inspires me to invest in my city as well in return. it is most certainly a win-win situation. However, despite this awareness, I know that not all neighborhoods in our city have these same benefits on their streets for their children. Specifically, I cannot imagine allowing my children or even my husband to walk or ride or bike on this section of 47th Avenue under the present conditions. My family has been to Whitaker Ponds, and presently our most reasonable mode of access to this wonderful park would be to drive, primarily due to the real safety risk that this street currently poses for pedestrians and bikers. Therefore, in conclusion, as a mother and a physician, I urge you to be equitable to other neighborhoods and families like those near 47th Avenue who may not be as fortunate as mine. Provide them with safe and healthy options for transportation with sidewalks and bike lanes. Join Kaiser Permanente with this effort to promote real change in the health of our citizens. Please allow them to go out and thrive in these most basic ways so we can all thrive together in this very special city. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
And the next three, please. Rebecca Hamilton, Rich Gunderson, and Lauren Young. Please come up.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Rebecca Hamilton. I'm here on behalf of the Pedestrian Advisory Committee for the City of Portland. And I think it would be hard to state any better than the mothers, business owners, neighbors, and health professionals that have already testified in support of this project for its safety benefits. Obviously, we're moving children walking from the fog line of a freight-heavy street to a protected sidewalk. Pedestrian Advisory Committee is obviously very strongly in support of that. What we would like to emphasize is our strong support for the interbureau collaboration and strategic funding plan that has gone into making this project come together. This kind of collaboration is a means of funding small projects that have a big impact on neighborhood livability and safety, yet we have a lot of trouble funding projects of this size. They don't usually show up in our big, exciting project lists for state, metro, active transportation funds. So we'd really like to applaud Mr. Abey and his team for their approach, and we would specifically like to encourage you to ask the Bureau to pursue more of these opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council. My name is Rich Gunderson. I'm here today representing the Colley Association of Neighbors, and you probably know me more as a Colley Park and Recreation guy. And I'm here today to support the LID. I think it is a fantastic deal for the property owners, number one. But number two, I think it's just a fantastic opportunity to improve the entryway to a great park in Whitaker Ponds and provide number. Most important thing, I think, is it provides safe access from the neighborhood to the park in the form of the sidewalks and the bikeways. So I hope that you will support this LID. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Laura Young. I never know how close to get to this mic.
You're fine.
Sorry. It's good. Okay. So I am an East Portland native, and I've been a resident of Colley for 12 years and a transportation advocate for most of those years. And on a personal note, I have actually witnessed 5 people hit by cars in my neighborhood in the last 12 years, so pedestrian safety is ever on my mind. That being said, this collaboration on this LED, it checks so many boxes for the neighborhood. It's access to jobs, access to parks, safe pedestrian access, safe bicycle access. Whitaker Ponds is a destination for people in the city, and it brings people into the community and drives economic benefits in the community as well. So I just wanted to show my support for the project, and also the collaboration is extraordinary. There is not creating an unreasonable burden for property owners, and Mr. Abbey's outreach in the community has been exemplary, and it's definitely fully supported in the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. That's it. Anyone else want to speak on this item? Further questions from council? If not, then let's please take a vote on the resolution.
So they often say that the city bureaus exist in silos and that the council members don't talk to each other and that we don't partner to get projects done. Well, this one just shows that actually that's not true.